we've gone through several different types of studies preparing you for all types of different things. And so this one is going to talk about what we believe, or why we believe what the Bible says about Jesus. So, just got a question for you. If I stood before you and gave you clear and incontrovertible evidence that the Gospels are wrong, that Jesus either didn't exist or he wasn't the Son of God, would that change your life? I mean, if this was undeniable evidence that Jesus was a fraud, would that change your life? Would that affect how you live your life? Would you stop going to church? Would you start going to a synagogue? If you found out that Jesus was not the Messiah, that he was not the Son of God, then that would mean that the religion God established was Judaism. That we would still be waiting on the Messiah, just as Jews today are still waiting on the Messiah. So, I mean, if you still keep going to church at that point, it's just because it's a habit. It's because it's a cultural thing if there was no evidence. And the reason why I ask this, it's not that I'm going to attempt to do that, because it's not the case. But just as that information would rock your world to its core and shake your foundations of your faith, just the opposite happens when you share the gospel with somebody. Now, it's got that same effect on them. All of a sudden, everything they believed is wrong. And there's going to be a dramatic, earth-shaking change to their life as a result. And so, that's what I really, in these next few weeks, want to teach you how to do. I want to teach you, whenever you start studying with people, there are going to be people that say, well, the Bible, you know, it was written a long time ago. It's, you know, I put it on the same shelf as my other fairy tales. And it's just stories people wrote a long, long time ago about a man who may or may not have even existed. And if he did exist, he probably was just somebody with a Messiah complex that, you know, thought he was something more than he was. And he taught for a while, and then he got executed, and that was the end of it. And that's how a lot of people feel about Jesus. They just put it into that same category as Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and everything else. You see a lot of people online that make fun of religious people. They talk about believing in your sky wizard, and they use derogatory terms like that to criticize your faith. And so if you're starting to try to teach somebody like that, the first thing they're going to say is, if the gospel writings about Jesus are true, convince me. So that's what I want to equip you with starting here, is how can you convince people that don't have that same level of faith? And by the way, they don't believe the Bible is inspired by God. So you can't just point something out in the Bible and say, see, this is what the Bible says, so therefore it's true. Because they don't accept that as proof. So now what do you do? In some of our other classes, when we talked about presenting the gospel, we said you've got to have a common foundation to build on. If you're going to work with people, you've got to have something that you both agree on before you can even start. And so for the purposes of this class, we're going to assume that they believe in general in a God, because somewhere around 80 to 85% of the people in this country say they believe in God in some form or another. So most of the people are either believe in God or they're agnostic. They say, I don't know if God exists. So they're probably willing to give it a chance. So we're going to assume that you're talking to somebody that has a general belief in God, but they've never really put a whole lot of thought into whether or not Jesus is the Son of God. Partly because if they believe that, now then that is going to change their life. So sometimes they don't want to believe. And so it's easy for them to write off these writings as, well, these are just fairy tales, just like Mother Goose, anything else. So what we want to do is just take a look at the facts. And over the course of this series, what we're going to talk about, the first lesson is going to be, can we trust the biographies of Jesus that we have? Are they trustworthy documents? Not just because the Bible says they're inspired, but otherwise, if we look at it in a strictly secular viewpoint, archaeologically speaking and things like that, are they trustworthy documents on the same level as any other ancient writing that tells a biography of somebody else? Or do they at least meet that standard on there? So that's what we're going to start with. Then we're going to talk about, after we get done with that in the succeeding weeks, we're going to talk about the other gospels floating around there. You may have heard in the news gospels that weren't included in the New Testament. The Gospel of Mary, the Gospel of Peter, the Gospel of Judas. There's all kinds of books out there that are not in the Bible. And so why not? Do they provide extra valuable information about Jesus that we ought to know? So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about, does our Bible contain the same words that were written? As you probably realize, we don't have the original manuscripts. The Bibles that we have were written based on manuscripts that had been copied and recopied and recopied, because that was what they had before the printing press. And so can we trust that even if the Gospels were correct as written, that we still have what they wrote? Or is it possible that things changed over the years? You're welcome to have a seat. It's going to be some interesting stuff. It'll be worth your while if you want to wait.
Everything you say, I agree with, but to me, you are omitting something, some stuff.
Well, then sit down so that you can make sure I don't, because I don't want to miss anything, and I don't want to miss a question that somebody has or that they've encountered. So if I skip over something, call me on
it.
Yeah, this is going to be about a two-month series that we're talking about, so I can't go through it all today.
Right.
But these are what we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about, is it possible to legitimately believe that Jesus died on the cross and was resurrected? I mean, it's easy to believe he died on the cross. Can we trust that he was resurrected? Because some people are going to say, yeah, I believe he lived, but I also believe he died, and that was the end of it. So that's what happens when people die. We're going to talk about, was Christ really the Messiah? Okay, so he lived. So he preached. Was he the Messiah? Did he meet the predictions, the prophecies about the Messiah? And then a lot of people claim our beliefs are just copied from pagan religions. That there were other people saying the same things ahead of time, and Jesus and then the apostles just kind of collected all these and formed a religion based on them. So we'll talk about that. And then finally we're going to finish up with people should be free to pick and choose what they believe about Jesus. And so we're going to address that. All right, have I piqued your interest enough to have a seat and join us?
No.
Because I need a skeptic in here. I need somebody that's willing to raise their hand and say, hey, wait, what about this?
A lot of stuff you say, well, it's true. I mean, I ain't gonna say it's not true, but I agree with a lot of you say.
Okay.
But there's a whole bunch of questions, too, that people do not answer. Like, when you talk about the Bible, the book left out, and put the Bible together, you know, Constantine and his council, and then the Bible been changed. I ain't gonna say the Bible been guess they use the word chain, but I think it was King Henry VIII, first one, or King Henry VI, and then King James, and now what they got the, with the Gideon version, and from the Old English to the New English, and all that stuff.
A lot of translations. And there is nothing more important in this next hour than you could go and do than what we would talk about in here. But you're welcome to stay. You're welcome to go. I encourage you to stay.
You might get an answer.
Brother, do you want to know? You want to know the truth?
I mean,
we're getting ready to break open the truth, and you're going to learn the truth.
I mean, I've heard that from other people, too, that they say the truth, you know.
If you want to know.
When you study religion instead of studying Christianity or Judaism or whatever, you study religion and what it is.
Study God's word.
What I'm going to talk about is not based. What I'm going to present is not based on the inspiration of the Bible. We're going to talk about facts, science, and evidence. That's what I'm going to talk about. That's
facts.
Facts. I agree.
You can't change the facts. Facts are the facts.
But I know, but it's a lot of facts that missing too on that.
Not to me, brother. I'm a true believer. I know Jesus, and I walk with God. I'm going to heaven.
There's geological evidence. There's physical proof that nobody can deny that point. And that's some of the stuff he's going to talk about.
Yeah.
That you cannot say either way. That is the truth because other people outside of religion say it's true. He's going to cover all that, the facts, and that might change your feeling on all.
So if you're in court and you hear the evidence, you make a decision, right? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to present the evidence, and everybody is free to come to their conclusion.
And you know what, too? Women don't go yet.
He's in. He understands.
Uh-oh. But you know what? It's a lot that we are learning. It's a lot of stuff that I go, I don't know about that. But you have to wait and see what someone has to say. You have to open up your heart. You have to open up your heart. Do you believe that there is a God? Number one. Do you believe that?
I believe there is, which I would say, a higher power. All right? And if you want to call it God, yes, you know, because a lot of stuff, a whole lot of stuff going on that man has no power to do. Something has to have that power. You want to call it God, I would call God too. I would agree on that.
Okay.
But, yeah, basis, right? So,
there you go.
You're the target audience for what we're going to talk about today. I just described right maybe before or as you were walking in who this lesson was geared toward, and it was exactly that. People that have some belief in a higher power and a creator, but people who may not be as convinced about Jesus being who the Bible says he was, as being the Son of God, as being the Messiah, as being having the qualifications to tell us what to believe. So that's what we're going to talk about. And we're going to start with the biographies of Jesus. We're going to start with the people who wrote down what it is that we know about Jesus. So who were these people?
You asking me that question?
No, I'm just talking to the class. But if you could close that door, that way we won't have distractions out there, and then you can have a seat right up here and we'll talk. So who were the people that wrote about Jesus? Okay, by name, who were they?
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
I missed it. What was the answer to that? But you said who were followers.
Who were they? You said they were followers. That immediately raises a question in your mind about their biases and things, probably. Okay, but and that's fine. But so who were these four people that wrote Jesus' biographies?
You're talking about the Gospels.
Yeah, the Gospels.
Matthew, Mark, and John.
All right, who was Matthew? Let's set the stage as we're looking for
this.
A tax collector and a disciple, more specifically, an apostle. There's a difference between an apostle and a disciple. We're disciples.
Right.
But the apostles were a special group of his disciples that we talked about, and Matthew was one of those. All right? Mark. Who was Mark? That one's not as easy, is it? What was Mark's knowledge? Was he an apostle? He was not an apostle. I'll make it easier for you. He was not an apostle. He was a companion of Peter. In one of Peter's books, I can't give you the verse right off the top of my head, but Peter says something about, I wrote in my gospel that thus and so. Peter's gospel is the gospel of Mark, because Mark was a companion of Peter. And so the first-hand knowledge that Peter had, he talked with Mark, and Mark wrote it down. Peter wasn't a writer so much. He did write a couple of books, but he was a fisherman. You know, he didn't have the eloquence of Paul and some of the other writers who had a formal classical education. He's just an ordinary guy. He wrote down some stuff. So who was Luke?
A doctor.
He was a doctor. That's the one thing that Charles remembers out of the 8 years I taught the teen class. He remembers that Luke is a doctor. All right. How did he get his knowledge of Jesus?
He was an apostle.
Not an apostle. Matter of fact, he's the only Gentile writer. So he was not an apostle. He was a Gentile physician who accompanied Paul on his missionary journeys. Not all of them, but some of them. In fact, when you're reading Acts, you're reading along, because Luke wrote the book of Acts as well as the book of Luke. And so he'll be writing along about Paul did this and they did this, and all of a sudden it switches to we did this and we went here. And then after a while it changes back to they went here and they did it. You can tell exactly where Luke picked up and traveled with him and when he stopped in a spot on there. So he got his knowledge of Jesus from Paul. So was Paul an apostle?
Yes.
He was. Was he one of the 12? Did he ever meet Jesus?
On the road.
On the road,
yeah. Okay, there you go. Not while Jesus was in the flesh, but he did meet Jesus. Where did Paul get his knowledge of Jesus?
From Jesus.
From Jesus, okay. All right, and Paul will tell you that. At the beginning of several of his books, he starts it off and he says, I'm Paul, and I didn't get my knowledge from anybody else. I didn't learn it from the other apostles. I learned it because Jesus himself told me this. So that's why his books are trustworthy that he wrote, because he wrote with the knowledge he got directly from Jesus. And in a way, that may even be more trustworthy, because everything is going to be directly applicable. I mean, if you just happen to follow somebody around and listen for 3 years to everything they say, you're probably not as focused of, okay, I'm going to sit down with you right now and tell you the information you're going to need to know. That's probably more specific and to the point. And so, once again, Luke got his direct information from Paul, who got it from Jesus. All right, and then finally John. Who was John? Was he an apostle? Okay, he was in what they call the inner circle. He was one of the, can you say, top three apostles. When Jesus would pull out a subgroup of apostles, John was included. As a matter of fact, it said that at the Last Supper, what was his position there? You remember? Okay, he and Jesus were kind of leaned up together. So that indicates he was one of his closest friends. And when in John's gospel, he does never refer to himself by name. He always says the apostle that Jesus loved. And so they had probably the closest relationship of any of the apostles with Jesus. We usually think it's Peter, but John is really the one that had the closest relationship. So that kind of sets his gospel in a little different light than the rest of them. Okay? So, do we have reason to believe that these Gospels were written by the people's names on them? Because they were written anonymously. You know how Paul's letters, he starts off and he says, Paul, an apostle. He signs his letters.
Right.
The Gospels are not signed. So how do we know who wrote them? I'm sorry, you had your hand up, Chuck.
Oh, I didn't. Well, Jesus wanted his mother to be with John. And that,
right.
I mean, that's big.
Yeah, that's significant.
Look after my mother, who I love.
Yeah, you don't just ask that of anybody.
Right.
That's true. Okay, so how do we know that the first gospel recorded in the Bible was written by Matthew?
Could be the target audience that it was written to.
Okay, that's a clue. That is a clue. Really, our information comes from early church fathers. These are Christians who wrote in the first and second centuries that were a lot closer to the information that we were because they had first, second, and third-hand information that we don't have access to today. One of them is called Papias. Don't quote me on the pronunciation of that. And plus, I don't know in English how you'd pronounce it anyway. But he was a writer in 125 A.D., pretty close to the situation. And he outlined at different times who wrote the various Gospels, and he attributed it to Matthew. And there were other writers, Irenaeus, I don't know how you say it. How do you say it?
Irenaeus,
that was long. Okay, he wrote in 180 A.D., the same thing. He outlined the same authors that we have that Papias wrote. And the first three Gospels, nobody really disputes who wrote them. That's generally accepted. That the individuals whose names are on them did write those Gospels. John is the only one that there's some question of. And that is because Papias mentions John the Apostle, and he mentions John the Elder. And we don't know for certain if those were one and the same, or if those were two different individuals. It is possible that two people collaborated on there, John the Apostle and John the Elder, but it is equally possible they were one and the same. John even refers to himself in Revelation as John the Elder, and I think in 1 John he does as well. He refers to himself as the Elder. So it's quite likely that they were one and the same person. We just can't tell for sure from the context of the writing that is the case. So, and toward the end of John, the writing changes a little bit where it looks like somebody else may have finished off that gospel for him. And so that, if they did collaborate, that could be where it was. Yes?
What you just went over, the gospels were written and re-referred in the same generation.
Yes.
So if there was any disputes whatsoever, it would have come out then.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Too many reaffirming of the Gospels in other areas outside of the Gospels.
Absolutely, and we're going to go into that in just a minute. That's a good segue for what we're going to be talking about. Okay, so first of all, we pretty much know who wrote the Gospels. And they were people with first and second hand information about Jesus. So even if you exclude the idea of being inspired by God to assume that we can trust everything that's in there. From a purely secular viewpoint, these were people with first and second hand information. So how does that compare to historical biographies that we have? For example, one of the best ones we have is Alexander the Great. The trustworthy biographies that we use to account his life were written 400 years after he died. And those are generally accepted as trustworthy. Now, there are some later ones, up to 1,000 years after that, where they start to introduce some legendary components and some things that you read it, and it's like, nah, I don't think so. Those were written much later, and people pretty much discount those. But the ones that were written 400 years later are considered that they're trustworthy, that they're reliable. So when were the Gospels written? How long after Jesus died? Any idea? the most liberal of scholars will tell you they were written from about 70 to 100 AD. They were actually probably written well before that, but that's what they will tell you. What was the first one written? Trick question. It was not Matthew. They're not in the Bible in the order in which they were written. Mark's actually was considered to be the first. And that was written most likely somewhere around 60 AD, 58 to 60. And so that is somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 years after Jesus' crucifixion. So very close to the events. And the others were written shortly thereafter. The appearance is that the other writers kind of used Mark's gospel for some inspiration to kind of lay out the facts. And some of the things they wrote appear that they kind of used it as a reference to maybe as a guideline, as memory jogger, if you want. Because one thing about inspiration doesn't mean that God dictated these books word for word. It means that God did the fact-checking. But the people wrote in their own styles, using their own vocabularies, and things like that. And if you read Greek, you can see the... And I don't. But you can see the difference in the writing styles from what I've read. From Peter, who was a fisherman, to Paul, who had, you know, one of the best educations you could have at the time. There is a world of difference in the writing. Mark apparently was not a very good writer. Apparently he didn't have a whole lot of training in that area, and so people criticize his grammar and things like that in there. But he got the facts correct, and that's what he was setting out to do. And so with the other Gospels, with Luke, he wrote his in the succeeding years after Mark, you know, probably mid-60s or so, something like that. Matthew as well, and the latest one written was probably the Gospel of John, somewhere around 90 AD. So even the latest one was within 60 years. What's significant about writing 30 to 60 years after an event? How is that different than writing 400 years after an event?
You might still have eyewitnesses.
There are still eyewitnesses. There are people around to hold up the flag and say, this is not right. I was there. I saw this. And we don't see that. We don't see those other writings. Sometimes people criticize the analysis of them, but they generally don't question the facts of what was recorded. Yes?
In writing, that's called the acid test. To make sure that it passes the test, that it's legit, because there's people who can say yay or nay, mm-hmm. those things are occurred. And that's historically wise, the Bible only one, about the only one that truly meets the acid test that was written in the same generation that it occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's incredibly significant.
Yes. Very.
That there's not time. Because there are a lot of writings that include legendary material. And as I mentioned, Alexander the Great, for example. And I'm going to talk a lot about the writings of Josephus. He was a Jewish historian that wrote in roughly the early 2nd century. And most of his writings are considered fairly authoritative. But some of them are kind of suspect. I was reading one of his books, and it's talking about this battle. And then he talks about how the king, who, by the way, was supporting him and paying for his writing, went in and wiped out this army all by himself. That was a little suspect to me, especially since he was funding the writing of this book. I was like, I'm not sure that's exactly how that went down. And so when you start seeing that legendary material, that's whenever you start to realize that, hey, somebody might have made this up. The Gospels include some material that would fall into that category, but because of talking about miracles and things like that, supernatural events that would be suspect, except that they were written within the time period of the eyewitnesses. Generally from history, we see it takes about 500 years before legendary material starts to be incorporated into people's lives, not 30 years. And this is when they were written. Don't forget, they were teaching these events within a year or two after Jesus' crucifixion when virtually everybody that was there was still alive. And so if they had been teaching this material, there would have been people all over the place saying, no, no, you know, you were there. You saw it didn't happen like that. He didn't feed those 5,000 people with five loaves and two fishes. You know, they sent the apostles into town, and they came back with bags full of food. You know, you can't get by with that kind of thing. You can't write legendary material about Barack Obama's presidency right now because we were all there. I mean, you can't write that he walked on water and did things like that because everybody's there saying, no, he didn't. And so you got to wait for sometimes hundreds of years to make sure all of the firsthand and a lot of times secondhand witnesses have died out before you can start making stuff up about
people. And there's quotes coming out a lot of times when people post them on Facebook and people say, no, that person has since passed away, or, you know, been hundreds of years ago. No, that person didn't actually say that.
Mm-hmm.
We have better records now.
Right.
There's a famous actress who came out with her autobiography not long ago, and it didn't take any time till this actor said, no, I did not do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're right. People have lawsuits over things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I think you forgot, or maybe you didn't forget to touch on when you were talking about how you can tell who wrote which book, is what events they cover, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because Matthew starts right off with a genealogy, and then one writes about the birth of Jesus. One of them just starts right with John the Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's another thing about it, too.
Why are they different?
Why are they different?
Why are they different? Why wouldn't they all just include the same things?
Weren't they different letters to different Greeks, Hebrews? I don't know what all the nationalities.
Yeah,
but they were geared.
You're right on target. They had a different writer from a different perspective writing to a different group. So that's why they were different. It doesn't mean they're not in agreement on the facts, but they were written for different purposes. Matthew was an apostle. He was a Jew. And everything in his gospel seems to be related to proving that Jesus was the Messiah.
Right. So he's going to start with the genealogy, of course.
Why would he start with the genealogy? What does that prove?
All the lineage from the beginning of time was all about God's people.
But what was he trying to prove with that lineage?
That he came from that
he came from who?
Abraham.
And?
David.
And David. Because those were the prophecies. The Messiah would come from David. And so, since Matthew is written to a Jewish audience, for the specific purpose of proving that he was the Messiah, he has to first establish he came from David. And that David was his ancestor. And so that's why he starts that way.
That was a big deal to them.
It was a big deal to them.
Very big.
Okay. And what was different about Luke from that? Remember, Luke was a Gentile. And he wrote to the Gentiles.
Yeah.
Okay. But he also includes a genealogy.
Yes, because the John the Baptist, that was foretold.
Okay. There were still prophecies and everything, even though since he was writing to Gentiles, they didn't care as much about what all the Old Testament said.
Right.
But it was still important.
Right.
And Matthew traced Jesus' lineage through Joseph because that was his legal father.
Right.
That doesn't prove anything. To Gentiles who know that Joseph was not Jesus' father, we would say that doesn't prove anything. So Luke traces Mary's lineage because Mary was his mother. Joseph wasn't his father, but Mary was definitely his mother. That's why you have paternity tests today and not maternity tests. You know who the mother is. You may not know who the father is, but you know who the mother is. So Luke traces Mary's heritage to prove that Jesus was from David.
And he says up front that he was born of God.
Yes.
Exactly.
You have to read very, very closely into it to realize that he kind of says something about that Jesus was supposedly the son of Joseph. And then he says, the son of, meaning Jesus was the son of and he goes, switches over. Because if you notice, the grandfathers are different in those two lineages. You know, starting from right there, the tracks are a little different. Yes?
You got to understand the Gentiles were expecting a Messiah too, because the intermixion, they knew that at some point they would be brought into all this.
That had been written.
At the well is a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
You were the one that we were told that it was coming. But they had a part. Eventually they knew that they were going to be a part of it. So they were looking for that Messiah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now then, something that I mentioned earlier. Were the gospel writers interested in recording the truth? You got to remember, they're not unbiased. They are Christians writing these books. So, how do we know that they intended to write the truth?
Well, anything that proved false in there would make the whole house of cards come tumbling down.
True, because they're verifiable from the people that were there at the time. Luke in particular was not only a good writer, but a good historian. And he starts his gospel by saying, many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good to me, also to me, to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you've been taught. He wanted to record things accurately, and he had to because they're verifiable at the time.
That's his title as a doctor. He wants to know the truth.
Yes.
And that's why it works so well in this, that we have so many different perspectives. Mm-hmm. As a doctor, he's going to delve into the truth and find out the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So
he has done his research. He didn't just merely write from the inspiration of God. He researched. And he made sure, since he wasn't an eyewitness as a Jew, you know, he talked to Paul and he talked to other people and he got eyewitness accounts and he used those in his writings. So even if you discount the idea of it being divinely inspired, it's still trustworthy. Yes.
Well, that's what I was hearing. These words was God breathed. So they had to write the truth.
Mm-hmm.
If God wanted us to know this, it had to be the mm-hmm. truth and correct.
Correct.
So to me, they had no other choice. God was not going to let them write a lie. Because he's not a liar.
And that's what the inspiration means.
Right.
He's not going to let them write a lie.
Right.
And that's important to us. And that's how we know we can trust it. But remember, the focus of what I'm teaching you is to teach somebody else. How can you prove without claiming inspiration that these are trustworthy? Yes?
Acts 4:13. When they saw the courage of Peter and John, and realized they were
mm-hmm.
they were astonished, and they took note that these men had been with Jesus.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jesus gave them abilities that they didn't have before, that they had never had training on. The speaking in tongues at the day of Pentecost. They didn't know these languages. They'd never been taught these languages, but they were speaking and understood in all of these different languages. Okay, so, and the writers, particularly Luke, have included details. They included people, places, events that could be fact-checked. And they have been extensively, and we'll talk about that in a future class. Did you have your hand up, Lynette?
I was thinking if that wasn't Theophilus a high-ranking government official back in the day.
We don't know for sure who Theophilus was.
I kind of remember that from Brian's class, but so that was maybe another reason. I mean, the dude could have, you know, fact-checked Luke very easily.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Assuming he was a real person. Some people have speculated that was a term used in general just to refer to churches. But I suspect that it was a real individual. And by the name Theophilus, it sounds like, you know, that was somebody that came from, you know, Greek or Roman, that this was, I think that's a Roman name, isn't it, Brian? Theophilus. But some people had Greek names and Roman names, and then some of them had Hebrew names as well. So sometimes people go by different names in the Bible. But it sounds plausible to me. This was a literal person that he wrote it to. And yes, that person would be very interested in making sure all this was correct. You know, what's the point of you making stuff up and sending
me
a letter?
Royalty, because they called him the most excellent
theater. Right.
Maybe,
probably at least a high-ranking official of some type. Okay. All right, last thing we're going to cover today, because we're running out of time, were the writers capable of accurately recording information that was written, even we acknowledge, 30 to 60 years before? And I'm talking about without the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. I mean, can you sit down and accurately write about something that happened to you 30 years before? I have trouble with yesterday.
Yeah, but did somebody walk on water yesterday?
Right, and that's the key. I remember big events from 30 years, things that were important. And you got to remember, they didn't just witness these events, then go live their lives, and then come back and write a book about them 30 years later. They've been preaching and teaching these events for 30 years.
Right.
So,
these were life-changing events.
Right.
Right.
So, for example, the astronauts that went to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. And you know, they still write things about it, but they've been talking about this their whole lives. This is the biggest thing that ever happened to them in their whole life. And so they've been recounting these stories over and over since that time. It's been kept fresh in their minds. And that's the way that these events were. These weren't something that I'm just sitting around now, what was that? Who was that guy's name and everything? This was a time of oral tradition. This is times when people told stories to their children. And expected those stories to be relayed in accurate detail generation to generation. And this was something, there were rabbis that had memorized the entire Old Testament. I mean, that's beyond my comprehension. I would have trouble, with Jesus wept. I can't imagine people memorizing the Old Testament. But they did. This was a skill that people practiced back then, the art of memorization.
They didn't have books, and they didn't have little notebooks that they carried around to write things in, so you had to tell things to remember. Whenever I worked for the Air Force at the archives, we had World War II soldiers coming in as much as we could to give oral histories for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because they may or may not have kept a diary, did have morning reports, but they could tell us their stories.
Right.
And I can tell you almost everything I did on 9/11, because you were gone that day. That was the day the movers brought our stuff in from Japan, so I was in there unpacking on that day, so I had two big events going on.
Right.
I tell you, Em was sick, and I had to go get her to school the day before, because I had to go drive her to school that morning.
Right, and you wouldn't remember that about any other day in history, but that one was significant.
But I can remember almost every little detail of that day, reason. And that's why I said, if a guy walks on the water...
Right. When you witness a miracle,
right,
you don't just forget that.
Right.
And especially when you've been telling that story every day for the past 30 years, believe me, you can write a book about the significance of it and do it accurately. Yes?
Well, John tells us that he couldn't, the books would fill up the earth.
Really?
He,
right.
So he did do so much.
Right.
And there were probably some things that stuck out in their mind a little more, like Lazarus, just because of the situation with that being his friend and all those things. I don't know that he didn't raise a lot of other people from the dead. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they did, but this is what God wanted us to know.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to know everything, because I don't even
Right. So, yeah, Jesus went here and he healed a guy, and he went here and he healed this lady.
Because I'm pretty sure it was a lot of healing, a lot of, rising up the dead. They just didn't do one and stopped.
Yeah, and so this wasn't just a biography the way that you read a biography of a famous person. These writings had a point. And they were, and that was the way ancient writings were. They were written for a purpose. And John was up, Luke was up front about it and told you why he was writing it up front. He's like, I want you to have a record of the important things that Jesus did. And so that means everything in there was for a reason. Everything that was included. And especially John's, because John wrote after all the others, all the chronological series had been written. He wrote in more of a commentary style. He wrote, he didn't care about chronologically, some of his events weren't in the right order, but he was telling a story for a purpose. And so he wanted to make sure that you understood who Jesus was and the significance of why he was here and how we know he was the Son of God and the Messiah. And so that's why he wrote. So that was important. All right, we're over time. I appreciate your attention. Brian, could you close us in prayer?